anger is my alarm system. Anger reminds me that I care, that I'm a really compassionate, loving person, that I care about myself and I love myself and I love my community and my people, and that I can, instead of trying to suppress my anger, which is often what women are taught to do because we must always be smiling and always be pleasant and always make everyone comfortable, that actually I can use my anger in positive ways.
Anger may not feel good, but it is a necessary antidote to an action. Right now, I feel angrier about the world than I ever have. The worst injustices of our nation in healthcare and racial equality are being laid bare, examined, and a large part of our country seems to be yelling back, "Leave it alone! Everything's fine. We don't want to change." My guest this week, as a doctor, a writer, a journalist, and a woman of color, is someone who lives at the intersection between these two intimately linked injustices. Now, watching someone like her, who's turned their anger into action, demonstrates more clearly than anything else how anger is far more than just a negative emotion. This is a short episode, because my guest had to run off and do a spot on CNN. But I hope you get as much out of it as I did. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to At Least There's This, a show about some of the small good things in our, in where we are right now. Things are rough, and they keep getting rougher. Coronavirus cases keep spiking. There have been nonstop protests on the streets for about a month now. So that's where we're at, y'all. But in a world where there's all that, at least there's
Muslim women.
Hi, everybody. I am with someone who I've had the pleasure of working with a few times, one of the most impressive people I've ever gotten the chance to work with, journalist, disease hunter, writer, Dr. Seema Yasmin. Hi, Seema.
Hi, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I know we only have you for a short amount of time right now because you have to actually go make an appearance on TV, but I have you right now to get to talk to you about your upcoming book, Muslim Women Are Everything.
And it's okay because I talk really fast.
So Seema, before we talk about the thing you came on to talk about, I wanted to ask, and I like starting most of my conversations with this, would you describe yourself as an optimist or a pessimist?
An optimist.
Why is that?
Because any other way, I would die from rage and I would combust in a second.
How so? Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Like right now, I am festering with rage, having heard some of the comments from the vice president this morning about the coronavirus pandemic. I am so angry at the criminally negligent leadership in this country and in many countries around the world. There was a study that came out last week that showed that 70% to 99% of Americans who died from COVID-19, that their deaths could have been prevented if America had acted earlier and more aggressively. So I am mad. I'm mad about that. I'm mad about systemic racism. I'm so mad that if I was just mad, if I was just angry and I had a pessimistic attitude to everything that is happening, I would spontaneously combust and you would be trying to have a conversation with a pile of ashes. I don't think that that's a good way for me to live my life and to make a contribution to the world, to try and make it a better place. So I take advice from the brilliant prison abolitionist and activist Marianne McCabe from Chicago, who talks about hope being a practice. And I live in hope. I have a great imagination. I'm a writer. I write poetry and fiction. So I use my imagination to think about a future that is more equitable, that is safer, that is more fun, that is just amazing. And it's that sense of optimism that stops me from combusting, that stops me from having physical manifestations of rage that are not good for me. So I use that optimism to channel my anger, my frustration, my rage into positive things to try and make the world a better place.
And is that something you've always had? Because I know your upbringing wasn't always very easy. Grew up in a single mother household, right?
Yeah, and in fact, I grew up in two single mother households because when I was 5, my mom was about 20 years old. She decided that she had had enough, that her marriage was terrible, that she was a housewife and she was very clever, and that this was not the right future for her daughter. So when I was 5, my mum left her community in the middle of England and went to university and was disowned by the family for a while for having made that decision. And so she raised me on her own, but then I'd go back and forth from her at university to her sister, who lived back in the community that my mother had left. And her sister was a very devout Muslim woman, also a single parent. She had 3 children, and she raised me in addition to her 3 kids. So there'd be years I lived with my mum on my own. There'd be years I lived back in the community with my aunt and my grandmother, and I had essentially siblings. And I had to be positive because I think otherwise I would have just been really sad. Not to say that there's not a role for pessimism, and not to say that optimism should take the place of understanding your reality and calling things out. And I think as a kid, I did too much of the optimism perhaps, and not enough of the, oh, things are crap. Because it's okay to say things are crap. But I think my coping mechanism as a kid was like, just try and put a shiny veneer on everything. And that's too much sometimes and not necessarily beneficial.
And when do you think you sort of phase shifted from that being your way of protecting yourself to having more of a realistic sort of optimism?
Like maybe last week, because I was talking to my friend Yalini, who's in Brooklyn, and I was like, look, I'm just so angry all the time. I'm angry about Breonna Taylor. I'm angry about Ahmed Obi. I'm angry about Sandra Bland. I'm angry about George Floyd. I'm angry about COVID-19 killing so many people, so many of my people. I've lost 2 friends to this. One of them, his funeral is today, actually, in London, and I can't be there. And I'm so angry, and so my friend Yalini has been teaching me that anger is really useful. Anger is my alarm system. Anger reminds me that I care, that I'm a really compassionate, loving person, that I care about myself, and I love myself, and I love my community and my people, and that I can, instead of trying to suppress my anger, which is often what women are taught to do, because we must always be smiling and always be pleasant and always make everyone comfortable, that actually I can use my anger in positive ways. So I think it's only, I joke it was last week, but you know, this is a process. I am learning how to maneuver through this really unjust world.
So I think that gives us a great transition into what you came on to talk about, if we're talking about having to suppress your anger to live how a society tells you women ought to live. Do you want to transition from here to talking about your book and talking about Muslim women in general?
Yeah, we can talk about that, and we can talk about the role of kindness in my life too, because I think that's a really important way that I stay positive and optimistic, is I have very kind people in my life.
Is that something that you think you've purposely attracted, or is that something that you've just been lucky enough to bring around?
So my dog had surgery, quite big surgery, a week ago today, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, just when I thought I could not handle any other trauma, the love of my life, this cute, innocent creature, has to have this terrible surgery. And I felt like I was at breaking point, and I reached out to my people, my community, my loved ones, and I was sheltered and held with so much love and kindness. And it was so much kindness that it was almost overwhelming. And I said to my mum, what's happening? Is everyone in my life just really, really, really kind? Or am I better at asking for kindness and asking for, you know, support? Because that's a really important skill to learn too, and I didn't learn that until recently. And my mum was like, maybe it's both. So I think it is something you cultivate. And of course, my mum being my mum was like, oh, it's because you're so kind. It's because you're amazing. It's because you put out so much good in the world. And I was like, no, mum. Like, it is, some of this kindness is coming from people that I don't always get to reciprocate their kindness. You know what I mean? For various reasons. So I don't know. I think I do love on people. I do put good energy out there. But that doesn't always mean you get good energy back. So I think it's a huge, huge blessing to have people that love you and are kind to you and show their kindness. And without that, I wouldn't be able to have optimism about the world, because otherwise everything's just one big fire.
One big, yeah. Well, you said something interesting that reminds me of something you said, you know, in the beginning of this call, that you said that you've learned how to ask for help, and you've
Yes.
also said not too long ago that you've been learning how to live with hope when you're so angry at an unjust
Yes.
world. Are those two things that you think have gone hand in hand, and how did you learn how to do that? Because, I mean, I certainly don't know how to do that.
Therapy. I had a
Yeah.
therapist who said, "You act like you have it all together. Everyone thinks you are amazing and perfect, and you have this amazing career, an amazing relationship, an amazing mom. You have all these nice things." And she was like, "But that's not the truth of who you are." And I was like, "Oh, but I've been doing that since childhood. I've been acting like everything is okay when many times in my childhood we didn't have a place to live. There was all, you know, it was precarious and it wasn't okay. But my thing very much was trying to mother my mother and trying to make everything okay." And the therapist made a point that I don't know if I still agree with, but she said, "If you act like you have everything together and you don't ask for support, people can't ask for support of you." And I was like, "That's not true, because my friends do ask me for help. I do get to help them." But I think there's a nugget of truth in there about be broken at the times that you're broken. Tell people, "I can't believe my dog's having surgery in the middle of a pandemic and some other very personal things are falling apart in my life and I can't deal." But the therapist said to me, and this was about 2 years ago, she said, "Ask for things." And I was like, "No, like what?" And she was like, "Ask for things." And I was like what? And she said, "Everything. Next time a colleague says, 'I'm just gonna pop out to get coffee, does anybody want one?' Say yes." And I was like, "I don't really drink coffee." She was like, "I don't care." And I was like, "What?" And she said, "Say, I would please like a decaf latte with extra cream or whatever." And I was like, "That's really needy." And she was like, "Be it, be needy." And so I did it. And people were like, "Okay, I'll get you a coffee." And I was like, "Oh." And then that same week, I was like, "Oh, I have a book coming out. My first book was about to come out, and I need an author photo." And my friend was like, "Oh, yeah, I do professional headshots, so I'll do it for you." And I was like, "Oh, you kind of ask for things, and people want to be helpful." And I can understand that, because I like to be helpful. So it's a process. I do think the two things go hand in hand, and you can't just be a receiver of love and gifts. Like, you have to give back, I think. But actually, one of the things I tweeted yesterday, last night, I tweeted, "How do you reciprocate kindness in friendships where you are overwhelmed by the generosity of others?" And I got lots of responses, many of them reminding me, you don't have to reciprocate. It's not about, like, you know, give and take necessarily. Let people be kind. And I was like, "That's exactly what my friends would say." But I also, like, I need to send some care packages. I need to send some thank you notes. Like, I need to do some of that. And some of the gifts I can't reciprocate because they are literally huge and expensive. But I guess I'm thinking about this a lot, that the kindness has showed up exactly when I need it. And how can I pay that forward?
Yeah, that's something that is powerful for me to hear, especially coming from someone like when every time I've had the great pleasure of working with you, you have always struck me as one of, if not the most accomplished people I've ever, you know, gotten to work with. You
And
have
that
so
can't
many
be an
accolades to your
accident.
name.
That can't be an accident, right? People are always like, "Oh, that's amazing. You went to medical school and then journalism school, and now you're a broadcast journalist and you've written two books and you have two books coming out next year." And I'm like, how come no one says, "Why? Why do you do so much? Why do you keep going to school? Why do you keep winning awards?" It's not an accident. It's clearly, and we don't have to do a therapy session here, and I haven't gone back to therapy in a few years, but there's something there, right, about me needing to, like, prove my worth in the world, me needing to prove my utility, my usefulness as a human being, taking up space and breathing in oxygen. Like, so it's lovely that people recognize my accomplishments, but I think I also need to interrogate why I, like, max out like that, and also how that makes people feel sometimes.
I think that is an important thing whenever I find myself talking to somebody who I consider very impressive. I think there is always that flip side of the coin, like, well, why are they this way? Is it just that they are some ubermensch, they're just better than everyone else, or is there some drive? And I think a lot of what you've said so far, I mean, in the 15 minutes I've had you on, like, you felt like you had to mother your mother, and you felt like you had to keep all your shit together because of the circumstances you grew up in. And part of that circumstance, and I'm sorry I'm being a little ham-fisted now with the transition, but I do want to get to talk about your book,
Oh, it's
is that...
completely connected, though. It's completely
Yeah.
connected because it's story after story after story of real-life Muslim women from around the world and across history who've had so many challenges, and we can talk about what some of them are because they're very interesting, but have just carried on. And it brings me back to that point that each chapter is about a woman, but none of her accolades were in isolation. It's all about community. It's all about support network.
Yeah, I want specifically to talk about that, but I also want to talk about it through the guise of you being the author. Like, when did you feel that you had to tell this story?
So what happened was a couple of years ago, or 2017, I sent out an angry tweet that turned into this book. And the tweet was in frustration of the way that some corporations, some people kind of pretend to celebrate Muslim women, but as they are celebrating us, are really telling on themselves. Are really showing that they're surprised that we can do things. They're like, wow, congratulations, Ibtihaj Muhammad. Oh my God, who knew that a woman that's Muslim and wears hijab could be an Olympian? Like, and so I was really frustrated. I tweeted something like, yes, Muslim women write code and kickbox and eat and like, what do you think we are? Because really that kind of fake celebration is questioning our humanity. And so I tweeted that, and a newspaper editor said, can you turn that into an essay? And I said, no, I am not writing another, we are just like you, we bleed just like you kind of essays. But I'm not one to turn down a platform. So what I did was I kind of wrote this FU poem, a kind of prose poem that was about fictional Muslim women doing incredible things like taking a nap, reading a book, digging salad out from between their teeth. And it was called Yes, Muslim Women Do Things. And it was beautifully illustrated by a young Muslim woman called Fahmida Azim, who's a brilliant painter, just a mind-blowingly phenomenal artist. So that piece then garnered lots of attention, and it became this book, Muslim Women Are Everything, but this is about real life Muslim women who do things. You know, they're ballerinas, they're astronauts, they're reality TV stars, they are choreographers, they are all of, they're queer, they're disabled, they're black, they're brown, they're white, they're all of the things. So it's really that true celebration of all the things that we are, and a big FU to anyone who tries to say you can't be transgender and a Muslim woman. This is like, yes, you can. You can be everything. Muslim women are everything.
And did you feel like as much as you were telling other people's stories here, you were also telling your own?
I guess. And it starts off with an essay by me about how all my life Muslim women have been everything. Muslim women have been the best upholders of the patriarchy. And then Muslim women have been the most amazing activists. And I was raised by two sisters in two different towns, in two different households, who were both Muslim but practiced their Islam differently, had different perspectives on the world. You know, my aunt wore a veil, still wears a veil. Many of the women in my family do. Me and my mum don't cover in that way. And so I always saw Muslim women as these multifaceted, complicated people, because there's, you know, we're not a single story, we're not a single thing. On a given day, we might wear hijab in the morning and then not wear it in the afternoon. So, and I used to wear hijab and I don't anymore. So yes, I guess it is very connected to me, my wanting to be everything. And in fact, even my bio in the book, it says Seema Yasmin is a Muslim woman who does everything. And that's part of like my way of like loving life is you can't tell me I went to medical school, therefore I can only be a doctor. Because I want to write a novel. I want to be a novelist, so I'm going to do that too. And then you can't tell me that because I write novels, I can't be a journalist, because I am a journalist. You know what I mean? So, like, you can't hold us back, although people try. And one way they try is by narrowing that story of what a Muslim woman can be, and it's totally inaccurate.
So in writing this book, what about your own perspective shifted, right? Like, what did you discover was something so beautiful about a world that maybe you thought you knew before you started writing it?
I was blown away by just how unstoppable we are. there were times when I was writing this book and I was going through some stuff in my personal life when I was writing it that gave me strength from reading what crap these women have gone through. Like, one example is this group of women called the Speed Sisters. They're young Palestinian women in the West Bank who take regular cars, Honda Accords, Honda Civics, and they soup them up and race them. And they keep beating the men. And the men are trying to like not race against them and trying to get them disqualified because they're women who keep thrashing them. But I was crying because these women are racers in a territory that's occupied, where because of these constant Israeli military checkpoints, it takes them 3 hours to drive a mile from their house to their grandmother's house. And yet they have carved out this niche for them as race car drivers, where they go onto the track and they are kicking up dust. And then there's Lale Sadiq, an Iranian woman who's a Formula One race car driver who keeps beating the men. So they keep trying to disqualify her in Iran. And how the national state television has dealt with this is every time she comes first, which is often, and she stands on the number one spot on the podium, and there's a guy in second place, and there's a guy in third place, the camera pans to second and third and cuts her out. So they won't show that a woman is in first place. This is happening right now. So I just got so much strength thinking, this is messed up, man. This makes me angry. But look at us. We don't stop. We just keep on going.
So when I do this podcast, I like to ask about why the thing we're talking about is good in two different ways, right? And I sort of taken this from the way that some people like to talk about truth, right? Big T and little T truth, but I like to use big G and little G good, right? Like, little G good is like, well, what makes it good for you specifically? And that sounds like what you were just talking about, where, you know, you were, as you were researching all of these stories, they gave you the strength to keep persevering through your own tough shit, right? Like, they made you feel strong enough to keep moving when you felt like you couldn't. And the big G good, I think we've talked about it for sure, but I think I just want to hear you say it in your own words, is the good that is universal, right? Like, what about this is a giant, beautiful blessing for the world? And do you think you could, in your own words, spell out what that is about Muslim women and especially about the research of your book?
And also, the little G good is also that I got to create this beautiful artifact. Because for every woman I write about in the book, Fahmida has painted a portrait. And they are stunning. They are gorgeous. And so I get to hold this book in my hands, and it's just very satisfying as a creative person to be like, we made this thing, and it's a gorgeous celebration of us. And maybe the little G good is also that it's a love letter from me to my sisters. And then the big G good is that there are misconceptions and misperceptions about Muslim women, and this just upends all of that. You can't read this book and put it down and think that we fit one story when we are all of the things, and including warmongers and military strategists. The thing is, if you let us be all the things we can be, or we allow ourselves to be, then that includes a problematic. You know, some of us are terrible people, but we get to be terrible because we get to be fully human. You can't just say we're oppressed. You can't just say we're subservient. Some of us, like some of the women in this book, were, you know, like I said, in armies that kept invading country after country. Do I condone that? No, don't do that. But this woman did it. And it's part of our legacy. It's part of her history. And so it just smashes open the world of Muslim women in ways that also pokes fun at the way that we Muslim women police other Muslim women. So there's one page in it that is Muslim woman bingo. And it speaks to all the crap we hear from outside of our communities, but also all the crap that we hear from inside our communities too. So it's, you know, we need to tackle all of those things.
Yeah, that makes me think of that. I was listening to a conversation between two black futurists, and one of the people talking was discussing how, like, sort of white colonialism decides you can be a human and then you can do inhumane things. But if you've never been able to be a human, you can't do anything inhumane. So, like, people who aren't human, you know, like, it doesn't matter if you're a warmonger, you're not a human. And it sounds like what you're saying in this book is, like, no, Muslim women are as much human as anyone. So that means as much of the beautiful, like, rock guitarists and kickboxers, that we can also be people who do inhumane things, like warmongering.
Yep, we can do everything. We are everything.
Do you think, had you had this book growing up, it might have changed some of your own outcomes to where you are now?
I think it would have made me braver earlier on. And actually, a lot of the feedback I'm getting is, oh my gosh, this is the book I needed when I was a kid. So I'm so glad it exists for all the people who, you know, the young people and the children out there. But I think it would have made me even braver than I am, because I am a brave person. I take courageous turns in life and do things that are adventurous. But I think it would have just made me, it would have expanded the possibilities for me earlier on.
So we're getting towards the end of the short time I have with you. I mean, I always want to be able to talk to you longer, but we're getting towards the end, and I want to let you go for the TV. So while I have you, can you let my audience know where they can find you and where they can find your work and keep up with all of the stuff that you do?
Yeah, so I have a website, seemayasmin.com, and you can find out more info about my books and stuff on there. But also on Twitter, I'm at Dr. Yasmin, and my IG is at Dr. Seema Yasmin. And I guess all the info is out there about, I don't know, TV appearances or my reporting on COVID-19, which might be of interest. And then, of course, my book that just came out, Muslim Women Are Everything. And then I have a book of poems coming out at the end of this year called If God Is a Virus, which, believe it or not, I started writing 2 years ago, and it's a lot about Ebola, not COVID-19. And I have a book coming out early next year called Viral BS, Medical Myths and Why We Fall for Them. And that's available for pre-order.
I've gotten to see Seema talk about some of the stuff from Viral BS is the name?
Yes.
Yeah, on stage a few times, and it's always been really funny and really insightful. Really quick, before I do my plugs, if you had one piece of advice for my audience right now, especially while we're in this COVID quarantine, but people will be listening to this after as well, so this can be life advice or anything, what would you want people to know from your perspective?
Ask for support when you need it. Asking for help is not a sign of weakness. It's a really, really a sign of strength.
Thank you. Guys, this has been a pleasure to have this conversation. I hope you enjoyed it too. As always, I've been your host. My name is Alex Schiffman. You can find this podcast wherever podcasts are downloaded. If you liked it, please go ahead and share it with a friend. It goes a long, long way in getting other people to hear what I'm doing. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.